Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Today I signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act because I support the freedom of religion for every Hoosier of every faith. As we all know, the Constitution of the United States and the Indiana Constitution both provide strong recognition for the freedom of religion, but today many people of faith feel their religious liberty is under attack by government action.
That's Indiana Governor Mike Pence talking about a bill he signed into law Thursday called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. This is a subject that I don't know that the Founding Fathers would have anticipated a time 200 plus years on in American history when we would be debating the nature of religious freedom. They saw it as so basic, so fundamental. In fact, probably the fundamental human right that forms of basis for so many others, is intertwined with so many others, they would have figured that we would have well ensconced this into our laws and to our way of thinking by 2015. But we are fighting for religious freedom, not only state by state, but nationally as well. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, March the 27th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk in the first few minutes about Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act with Pastor John Feeney, who testified before the Indiana House and Senate Judiciary Committees in favor of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act several times. A little bit later, you've probably seen news about an alleged discovery of a car-sized prehistoric salamander. That's something of one's nightmares if you're not inclined in that direction. Dr. David Menton of Answers in Genesis will be our guest. We'll talk with Lydia Lovrick, a mother of three in Canada, who's really raising some dust over at HuffingtonPost.com with a piece that she has written called Dear Daughter, Here's Why I Don't Work. We'll see what she has to say about that. Chris Roseborough will join us in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. This Week in Pop American Christianity, we're going to spend the time talking about the fourth of John Hagee's Four Blood Moons prophecy. Chris says it's just a lunar eclipse, but John Hagee and a lot of people have made a lot of hay and a lot of money off of those astronomical events. Then, since it's Friday, we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That's four soundbites that we have gathered. Actually, this week it's five. Five soundbites that we have gathered from this last week's Issues Etc. audio. We'll play them for you, and then your vote will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It will be your opportunity to win the LPR bundle package. That's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, mouse pad, and notepad. And the only way to get it is either to come in here personally and shake our hands or to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll be doing that in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Join us for the next 2 hours with questions or comments. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. A tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, feel free to use the Issues Etc. comment line. That number, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act, Pastor John Feeney. He's pastor of Advent Lutheran Church in Zionsville, Indiana. He testified before the Indiana House and Senate Judiciary Committees in favor of the act. It has been signed into law there in Indiana. Pastor Feeney, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much.
You're a preacher of the gospel. Why did you feel compelled to stand up in the public square and testify in favor of this bill?
Well, I think all of us are recognizing the fact that there is some encroachment on our religious liberties and freedoms. And right now, a lot of the things that we have held very sacred in the past, including President Harrison, who has noted that life issues, marriage issues, religious freedom issues are all interconnected. And if we are able to enter into the civic sphere and to use our rights, which are actually God-given rights, recognized by our confessions and, of course, also scripturally, that we have the right and the necessity of trying to be able to also make people realize that these rights, which are God-given rights, are also things that need to be defended in the form of legislation. And it's getting to be much more difficult nowadays to do that, but we have to have the courage to do it.
So what, in essence, did you say when you testified, not once, but I think several times, in the Indiana House and Senate Judiciary Committees? What was your basic case as a pastor of the community and of the state?
Well, my opportunity to spend too much time was somewhat limited because some of the best presentations actually came from some of the law professors who were trying to explain to the legislature that this law was not something which inhibited or in any way promoted discrimination, that in fact it was defending liberties that would be enjoyed by everybody. But my presentation was essentially to say that it's very important that we protect and guard our consciences, because if you are compromising people's consciences, and it doesn't necessarily even matter that they're religious consciences, but that when you start violating people's consciences, you end up creating a problem in your society that will ultimately damage everybody's rights. So the sensitivity to religious consciences is also very closely related to those of others. And I use an example of a member of mine who did not want to go to work for a company that was making armaments that would be used as bombs in the Vietnam War. And this is an individual who, had he been forced to do something against his own conscience, this would have created, I think, a crisis. And our government has recognized that. But, of course, religious freedoms being more important than anything, if you look at the history of our country, it's really such things as the abolitionist movement. These were people who, out of their religious conscience, could not take or bear the idea of the enslavement of human beings. And these were not just even moral issues in society, but really very much spurred by Christians who believed in this inherent dignity that should be given to all mankind. And so I think my argument is that by defending religious liberties, we're really defending everyone.
So let's respond, if you could, to a couple objections. And one of them is, and this is probably especially in light of the general redefinition of marriage that's taking place, that what religious people are asking for, what a bill like this would permit, is discrimination on the part of religious people against lesbians, gays, transgendered. The list goes on. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the legal profession, if they're honest, would have to say that that simply is not true. It hasn't been true anyway in the state of Indiana. We know of no case where that kind of discrimination has taken place. There have been instances, and this is where some of the concerns of the legal professors was that they said you have to understand that there are some very severe tests here. If you are, by what these lesbians or gays are asking you to do, forces a business owner to materially participate in something which is against their conscience, like, for instance, participating in a wedding, that this law would protect you from being forced into having to do this. It doesn't protect you from merely selling your merchandise to anybody that you want. So in other words, my way of putting it is that you can't discriminate against a noun, but you can discriminate against a verb. That is to say, if you are being made into a participant in something, an action or something that's happening, which is contrary to your religious beliefs, this law will protect you. But insofar as it's a person who simply comes in and asks to be able to participate in whatever product or service that you're offering, you cannot discriminate against those people. So this is a ruse. This is simply not true that this law would in any way promote or encourage discrimination.
What do you think about, and this is what we're hearing in reaction both leading up to and then with the governor's signature of this religious restoration bill, gay rights advocates are suggesting boycotts, businesses threatening to boycott the state of Indiana. What do you make of those?
Yeah, well, when you're the 20th state to do this, it seems to be a little absurd that that you would try to be able to use, or I call it bullying, the ACLU, even our own Indiana Chamber of Commerce opposed this Cummins engine, the NCAA, and now even Hillary Clinton has tweeted or whatever, and which, of course, is the ultimate hypocrisy or denial of what it is that her own husband had done, because back in 1990, I think it was, there was a Supreme Court case in 1997 that generated this RFRA legislation before both houses of Congress in the United States. It was a 1993 federal law that was passed unanimously in the House and by 97-3 in the Senate. And it was landmark legislation. It went across ideological lines. Bill Clinton praised this as one of the greatest things of all, praised our religious liberties and described them as because they're guaranteed in the First Amendment, that this was foundational to all of the other amendments. In other words, if you don't have religious liberties, these other liberties that were also guaranteed in other amendments kind of drew their nature from this First Amendment. And when people come along and they're going to boycott you, or they're going to pull their businesses out, or they're going to label you as being discriminatory, I just call it bullying. They're just trying to be able to bully, because I think what we are dealing with here is a politically correct kind of social thing, where if you don't go along with these types of people who are advocating, I think, for a breakdown in any number of traditional values, you're going to be bullied. You're going to be targeted, and your businesses will be targeted. And so there's this huge body of people out there that are actually going to be in support of it if they knew what all the facts were, which, of course, the press is not giving people facts, and many people are reacting emotionally, which is ridiculous. But in the end, I think what we're going to have to do is just kind of try to ride this one out. There will be other states that will follow suit, but why Indiana was particularly targeted for all this negative press, I'm not exactly sure.
What is it that concerns you most? You mentioned RFRA being signed by President Bill Clinton in 1993 to overwhelming support. And now the very same people, in some cases, who would have hailed that as, and I agree, landmark legislation during his administration, are turning the tables, are going the other direction. What do you think has changed as you've watched over the last 20-plus years on this issue in our culture that has brought about the necessity of states passing their own RFRA-less legislation?
Well, in great part, it was the reason for the states having to pass legislation in RFRA was because of the Supreme Court decision that essentially voided this federal law and basically said that it was inapplicable to state and local laws. So this is the reason for why it became necessary on each state level to pass this legislation. But obviously what has happened is that in a very, very, very short period of time, we're not even probably talking here even 10 years, there's been this enormous shift in our country away from and almost intentionally adverse to things like marriage and the traditional relationship between a man and a woman as being foundational, I guess you might say, to the definition of marriage. And what I think used to be a general openness or a willingness to concede that religion played a vital part in people's lives, I really think the last 10 years what we have seen is that people are using almost a kind of a fear-mongering, or they're using propaganda to make it appear as though religion is something which is negative in people's lives. And in the churches, there's been the mainline churches, many of the mainline churches have actually seen which way the wind is blowing, and they are coming out in favor of and trying to be able to get ahead of this very almost anti-religious, anti-traditional marriage and life and so on and so forth, that we're seeing these denominations that are losing it, I think. And then, of course, in the non-denominational churches, we're even seeing that they are bending very often in the wind and kind of the spirit of inclusiveness. So some minority groups, like the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, are kind of having to shoulder the burden of being a conscience. And very often we're dealing with apathy and indifference on a part of the people. They don't think that there's anything they can do. They don't think there's any way that they can reverse this. They're just going to try and ride it out. And in the end, our legislation is going to be changed, and it's going to undermine our rights and take them away. Very similar to a lot of the things that happened in Nazi Germany. Very similar.
Pastor John Feeney is pastor of Advent Lutheran Church in Zionsville, Indiana. He testified before the Indiana House and Senate Judiciary Committees in favor of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. John, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
When we come back, Dr. David Menton of Answers in Genesis will join us. We're going to talk about the alleged discovery of a car-sized prehistoric salamander. Stay tuned. What do lay people owe their pastors? I've written an article in the latest issues, etc. journal titled, What Hearers Owe Their Pastors, Receive the Gift, and you can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Jim Pierce's journey from Pentecostalism, fundamentalism, and atheism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues, etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
In Hosea 4, we read, My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us and encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, etc.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan, in Rochester Hills, the Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's LCIW.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at lciw.org.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues, Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.